Hi, my name is Heather, and I am an alcoholic addict. Hi, guys. My sobriety date is January 19th, 2010. Thank you. So I got sober in the dead of winter in Texas, so whatever that means. And whenever the weather starts to get like this, you know, it gets a little bit cooler, I get these flashes of my bottom. Because right about now, this time, you know, 7.5 years ago, it was starting to get really, really bad. And I'm filled with gratitude whenever I get these flashes because in comparison, my life today, like my sober life, is such a good life. Like it's such a sweet life and such a precious life, you know? And so I try to relish in these flashes because the longer I stay sober, like the miracles and gifts of this program are just so commonplace, like they're just so on the regular that I forget to notice the gifts. And really remembering what it was like helps me to live in the magic of my life today. So I could tell you guys that I'm an alcoholic addict because I was born to two 17-year-old alcoholic addicts, and like all of the like complications and like harsh realities that brings, but it's not the reason. I'm an alcoholic and addict because I like the effects produced by alcohol. And like, I would always laugh when I would hear that because like, who doesn't like the effects of alcohol and drugs, right? But I'm learning that normal drinkers, they have an enough button. And alcoholics and addicts, we have a more button. And the longer I stay sober, I'm realizing that truly my drug of choice is more. You know, it's more love. It's more success. It's more sugar. It's more working out. And it's basically just more me. And so it makes sense to me now whenever I go to meetings and I hear the old timers in the meeting say, you know, I need a lot less of me and a lot more of God. And the only way I know how to do that, you guys, is through working the steps in this program. You know, and saying yes to some scary shit, like coming here and talking in front of you guys tonight. And like telling my sponsor the truth, which is really tricky for me because I love to live in delusion. Like that's my favorite place to live, in fact. But I'm learning that God lives in the truth. And I want to tell you guys that working these steps have absolutely saved and changed my life. It's been really fascinating for me to see how I show up in this world. And when I say show up in this world, I don't mean like how I look. What I mean is how I react and respond to life on life's terms. So I guess I'm supposed to tell you guys what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, I need that to like brace myself. I'm kind of nervous here. So the first time I ever felt different, like not a part of, not enough, was right around the age of 4. So, you know, it was really little. And I was starting to notice that our family was different, right? Like my parents were severe alcoholics and addicts, and we just didn't look the same as other families. And so from a really young age, I started to try to create this illusion of like normalcy, right? And the whole time I was feeling like this gigantic fraud doing that. And I have this real specific memory. I remember I was a little tiny girl, and I was like either in some kind of after-school program or some kind of preschool program or something. And I was playing outside, and my mom came to pick me up. And she's wearing jeans and like a white long john shirt, and she had blood marks right here. And like I didn't know what that was at the time, but like I knew what that was. And I remember like I ran away. And I'm like, no, that's not my mom. Like, no, I'm not going home with her. Like, no, that's not my mom. And this was the late 70s, so things were a lot different back then. So, I mean, I guess they just kind of sent her away. And the next thing I know, I'm playing with this other little girl, and her mom comes walking up to get her. And she's dressed normally, and, like, she's been to work, you know. And I remember looking at her and saying, I wish you were my mom. And I'm not telling you guys that story to, like, say how hard it was for me or how bad it was for me. I'm telling you that story to describe the separateness that I felt from a very young age and to describe, like, this you know, this illusion or delusion that I loved to live in, which I believe in the early days was a coping mechanism for all the chaos and drama and weirdness that was going on in my life. But much later, I learned through working these steps in this program, it's just something that doesn't serve me anymore. So my first drink, so I always love to, whenever, you know, I'm listening to speakers talk about, we as alcoholics love to talk about our first drink. Like, we can remember it with vivid detail. And, like, people who don't have a drinking problem, like, they just don't. They don't remember it. We can spend 30 minutes talking about, you know, our first drink. So I am no different than that. I remember my very first drink. I was 13 years old. I went to go visit my favorite aunt in California. And let's see, I guess it was 1986, and she was taking me to eat sushi, which was like a really big deal. You know, I'm from Texas. We were like barely eating Chinese food in 1986. So sushi was like, what? And so we get there, and they're serving warm sake, and she let me have some. And I will never forget. So then we, like, she's, you know, she's kind of like, she's got this glamorous kind of life, you know, and so we hop in her red sports car afterwards, and I remember hanging my head out the window, and I'm just, like, looking at the lights and the palm trees driving down some L.A. boulevard, you know, and the wind was blowing in my hair, and it was a powerful, powerful experience, you guys. Like, I will never forget that experience. So I come back to Texas, and I didn't really have a lot of, there wasn't any real, like, drinking episodes in high school that I can recall. I just remember that feeling of separateness, that feeling of not being a part of, that feeling of, like, just not being good enough and living in constant fear. Like, that was, this, it was like this gaping hole in my soul. Like, I had that feeling so strong in high school, and high school was some of my darkest times. You know, I struggled with depression during that time. I couldn't focus. I did some, like, modest attempt at suicide, you know, all this kind of thing. It was just a really dark time for me until I was 18 years old. I got invited to a party, and somebody gave me a hit of X. And everything changed. So, like, I took the X, and I'm drinking. And all of a sudden, for the first time I think ever in my life, I felt connected. I felt a part of. I felt like I belonged. I had this sense of peace. I had this sense of trust with people I didn't even fucking know that everything was gonna be just fine. And ironically, those are the exact same feelings that I find in recovery today. So after a while, I became a little bit more sophisticated, or at least in my mind, with my drinking and using, and I moved on to cocaine and alcohol and boys. Boy dope is what we call it now that I'm sober. And you know, and I was doing that, and I was doing that for a while, and I was, like, in the end scene and, you know, feeling all cool, and that was working out really well for me. It was working out so well that I found myself snorting heroin on a Sunday morning because I had like brunch plans with some people that I needed to look good in front of or whatever. And I'd been up all night binging on cocaine and alcohol the night before. And this, you guys, that day started my 10-year love affair with heroin. And I don't call it a love affair because it was glamorous or something that I romanticize or something that was good in my life. I call it a love affair because it was first and foremost, and nothing and no one mattered to me more. And I can say that after losing my family, I lost my husband. I lost custody of both my children. I lost a second husband due to a drug overdose. And how did I deal with all of that? By using more. I woke up next to my husband laying dead from a drug overdose next to me, and my first thought was, how in the fuck am I going to be able to get enough dope? How can I stay high enough to even deal with this? You know, and I lost both of my children. I lost custody of both of my children. And I didn't even try to get custody back. And I barely even tried to access visitation, because drugs and alcohol mattered more to me than that. And it kills me. It kills me to say that today. But I think it's really important to say that, because that describes the horror of this addiction, the fucking hell that we've lived in for so long. And I'm sorry I'm cussing. There's kids here. I'm really, really sorry. Excuse me. But, you know, I do have to say that this is such a beautiful thing, that this wasn't offered back in my day. And what a beautiful thing that you mothers get to be here with your children and recover, and they get to be in the energy of all of this. Like, I'm really, that's amazing. I'm moved by that. I'm really touched to see that. Maybe if that could have been available to me back in the day, things could have been a little different, you know? Okay, so as bad as all of this got, as bad as those two things were, which are pretty freaking bad, it got worse. So those things were just the very beginning of the incomprehensible demoralization of my addiction, right? Like, that was just the very beginning of me not being able to look at myself in the mirror anymore. And my world began to get smaller and darker and lonelier. And I can remember one day, I'm sitting outside. I'm in a full-length, long wool coat in Texas in July in a rocking chair because I'm freezing, smoking a cigarette, and I'm rocking, you know, and I'm like, God, you know, like, I don't know how much longer I can fucking do this anymore. You know, like, I don't know how much longer this can go on. You know, I really want to be sober. I really want to be sober, but I don't even know if I'm worthy anymore after everything, you know, that I've done. I knew a little bit about recovery because I had been to rehabs. In fact, I'd been to this rehab. I didn't graduate from this rehab. But apparently you don't have to graduate to tell your story, which I'm grateful for. It wasn't this nice. It was a little different when I came here back in 2001. So this is a really, really nice facility, you guys. I'm really pleased to be here and see this. So I knew a little bit about recovery because I'd been to rehabs, you know, and I'd been to some meetings and but I'd never worked the steps, right? Like, I'd never worked the steps. I'd never had a spiritual experience. But even still, it was enough to plant the seed. So after getting dosed at the methadone clinic, I would drive to this 8:30 a.m. Western Trails meeting. And it was a meeting that I was familiar with, you know, so I would go there. And I would sit there, and like, I didn't really understand a lot about what people were saying, but I kept hearing spiritual experience. And I knew that if I was ever going to have one of those, I needed to probably get off methadone. So I go to my methadone clinic, and I talk to the doctor, and I'm like, yeah, so like, I've been going to this meeting like around the corner from here, and like, I'm really digging it, and I think I want to get off methadone. He's like, oh no, you can't go to AA meetings. You need to come to our meetings 3 times a week here in this facility, and you need to see our therapist 1 time a week. So he's like, or else we're not going to dose you anymore. And I'm like, well, shit. So I'm quickly learning that, like, you know, getting clean is a direct conflict with their business model. So I comply, and I'm doing their meetings, I'm going to their therapist and whatever. And finally I just sit down with the therapist and I go, look, you know what? This is not the way that I envision my life. Like, this is not the way I want my life to go. You know, I don't want to be on methadone anymore. I've been going to this meeting, this AA meeting, even though you guys say that I shouldn't. I've been going there every morning after I leave here, and I'm really digging it, and I want to have a spiritual experience, and I want to get off methadone. She's like, okay, really? And I'm like, yeah, really. And she's like, okay. She walks up to her, like, little calendar on the wall, and she goes, okay, so when do you want to get off? And I'm like, oh, well, I mean, I don't know. And she's like, how about this day? She puts an X on January 18th. So she slowly, like, lowered my dose until January 18th was my last dose. And so January 19th, 2010 is the day that I was finally clean and sober from everything. And I mean, it was not easy, you guys. Oh my God, that shit lingers for months. It was a difficult, difficult detox, but I had this sense of freedom. Like, for the first time. And also, it was like the very first esteemable act that I had done in a really long time. One of the very first really cool ways that God showed up in my life right after that is, back when I was still out and about, I was dating this drug dealer, and he got busted, and he needed like $5,000 to get out. And so, of course, I hustled and did whatever and managed to put together $5,000 to get him out. And then shockingly, you know, he didn't show up for his court date. So, like, I never got my $5,000 back, and I bitched and I moaned and I was so pissed. You know, because I really needed that $5,000, you know, for more booze and more dope and that asshole. And so flash forward now to me being just barely newly, you know, sober, and I'm working as a hostess at Gumbo's, and I'm thinking, working as a hostess, like, this really isn't sustainable. I need to do something else with my life. And I was like, oh, wait, I was a hairdresser. Like, I used to be a hairdresser, like, 10 years ago. Wonder whatever happened to that license. So I go and find out that license is expired, and it's going to take, like, I need to go back to hair school for 3 months to reinstate it. But school is like from 8 in the morning till 5 p.m. and it's going to conflict with my, you know, work schedule at Gumbo's. And I was only going to be able to work nights now, and I wasn't going to be able to afford to go to school to get my license. I was really struggling with this, and I walk out to my mailbox, open it up, and that $5,000 check is sitting in my mailbox from like 2 years ago. And so, like, I'd kind of forgotten about that, and I didn't ask any questions. I put the money in my account, and I was able, that, like, sustained me for that duration for me to go back to school and get my license reinstated. And I know that's kind of a weird story to share, but that was like my God speaking to me in a way that I could understand at that time in my life. It was like the first time that I realized that God truly had my back, you know? So now I'm in my first year, and I'm doing hair, and I, like, suck because, you know, I haven't worked in 10 years, legally anyway. And I'm, like, trying to perfect my craft, and it's, like, all I can do, right, to, like, go to work and then go to a meeting. And that's all I did. I just, like, went to work, and I went to meetings. But on Thursday, every Thursday, I had to go to my sponsor's house, and we had to do step work. And I didn't really know, like, what I was doing or why. I just knew that I'd better have my step work done by Thursday. So, you know, so I did it. But I didn't do it with any real understanding, and I'm embarrassed to say that to you guys, but that's just my experience. Like, I just didn't. Like, I just did it, and I took it to her, and then, you know, and that was that. But, you know, what was read in this preamble, it said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And, like, in spite of myself and without even knowing it, that's what I was doing. All I heard her say was, if you do this, you don't ever have to go back. And that's all that mattered to me. So I just stepped up and I did it. You know, no questions asked. I just stepped up and I did it because I didn't ever want to go back. So I don't know when I had a spiritual experience. Like I hear in meetings and, you know, other speakers, and they have this like big burning bush, you know, spiritual experience. Mine, I guess, was like the educational variety. All I know is that all of a sudden I started to look around my life and I liked what I saw for like the first time in a really long time. And I was feeling happy. Like I was starting to feel happy. And I was starting to feel hope. So around year two, naturally I wanted to reconnect with my youngest son that I'd lost custody of during my addiction. So I have two boys, two different dads. And when I lost custody of them, they were separated. And my older son, Drake, went to live with his father in McAllen. And my younger son, Luke, stayed here with his dad in Austin. And so I had been able to, to regain and, like, maintain contact with my older son, Drake, in McAllen. And I hadn't yet been able to do that with my younger son, Luke. And it was really cool because with Drake, I was able to make a face-to-face amend to him. And I was, am still constantly making living amends, you know, to him. And I was also able to make a face-to-face amend with his father. And this was a man who freaking despised me. He had to take me to court twice to try to get custody of our son. And the first time I won unfairly. And the second time he was able to win, but this was after spending like hundreds of thousands of dollars, just to know, you know, just to make sure that his son was safe and okay. And so, you know, I remember I was sitting there making this face-to-face amend with him, and I'm trying to like really own, you know, all the pain that I must have caused. And, you know, and asking him, like, is there anything that I've left out? And it was so amazing because, like, I could feel, like, years of feuding just, like, melt away between us during this conversation. And he's, like, this big machismo guy. I mean, he's, like, 6'3", you know, and he, like, teared up. And he looked at me and he said, you need to go fight for your younger son, Luke, because you haven't done something so horrific that he should be out of your life forever. And I mean, for him to say something like that was, it was profound. It moved me after everything that I had put him through. So that's when I realized that I needed to make an amend, you know, needed to at least make a face-to-face amend to my younger son, Luke. And see if maybe we could salvage, you know, our relationship. But the problem was, is that we hadn't had contact in 7 years. So I needed money for a lawyer to regain contact with Luke. And to save money, I moved in with a woman. Some of you may know her. You know her definitely, Ivana Grahovec. And we lived together for 2.5 years. And that was such an amazing time in my life because we were two recovering heroin addict women who lived together, who paid our bills on time. You know, I mean, we like kept the house, our little apartment like clean for each other. Like we laughed all the time. And we loved each other enough to do step work on each other when shit got weird. And so she was truly like my spiritual ninja. You know, she inspired me because she's so fearless and she's so adventuresome and she like really lives in the magic of this program. And God put her there, you guys. Like God put her in my life at that time because I was about to have the legal fight of my life and like I was scared shitless and I needed all of that around me at that time. So another cool thing that happened at that time was that I ended up getting 6 sponsees. And so I remember I called my sponsor and I'm like, what the hell? I have 6 sponsees. And this sucks because like I have to work full time and I get called in for these like weekly random UAs or like fingernail testing or hair follicle testing. I have to go to therapy, you know, and like I have to go to my own meetings and I have 6 of them and I have to meet them once a week. So I'm meeting a sponsee 6 nights a week and I have to drive to these treatment centers on Sunday. And she's like, she's laughing at me and she's like, you know what, Heather? Things are about to get hard for you. Whenever I get a bunch of sponsees, things are about to get hard for me. I'm like, what do you mean things are about? Like, I don't like to be uncomfortable, you know? Like, I'm an addict. I want it to feel good all the time. And so she couldn't have been more right. It's so incredible how God just like, he just like puts you right here. You know, it's like he just put me right in the middle at the time that I needed him the most. Because I'll tell you what happened with those sponsees. So I'm like navigating this big, scary lawsuit, right? And like, I don't know how any of that's going to turn out, but I was in wicked obsession and fear. I was being driven by 100 forms of fear around this, if you can imagine, trying to reconnect with a kid that I abandoned 7 years ago, right? And all of this shame and the guilt and the remorse from that. And like, these girls would call me and they'd be like, so how do I not go to the dope house today? And I knew how to do that. Like, I knew how to tell them that. Or how do I not go to the bar today? And, like, I knew how to do that. Like, I didn't know how to do this lawsuit, but, like, I knew how to do that, right? And so these calls got me outside of myself, and they got me out of my fear. And the other really cool thing that happened around that was, like, all those times I was driving to my sponsor's house, I didn't know what the fuck for, really, or what I was doing. As I started working the steps with these girls, like I started really understanding how the steps work. It's like once you become a teacher, like you're learning on a different level. Do you know? So that's when I realized also that I had worked the program so hard, and then the program started working me. So I have a really difficult time talking about this next part of my life because honestly, I've never really done it from a position like this before. I've only told my story one other time. So I really appreciate you guys giving me the service opportunity, but this part's really difficult for me to talk about, this part of my story. So I will tell you that I won the lawsuit legally, but I did not win my son's heart. I was able to make a face-to-face amend to him and a living amend by honoring his wish that I leave him alone. I mean, after all, it had been 7 years. And this is when I got really mad at God. You know, I was like, I am going to meetings. I'm working my fucking ass off in this program. I'm sponsoring 7 women. And what kind of a God are you that doesn't want a mother reconnected with her son? Right? But I'll tell you the interesting thing that I didn't notice for a really long time. And that was that never once did the thought of drinking or using ever enter my mind. Which is fucking amazing. Like, that's incredible. But I was pissed. I would go to meetings, and I would hear people with, like, 3 months say, I got my family back, I got my car back, I got my house back, I got my wife back, I got my kids back. You know, oh, it's the power of AA, ooh. You know, and... and I'd get up and leave. And so I didn't use or drink, but I started acting out in other ways. I got into this really, unhealthy relationship with an active alcoholic addict. That was fun. I developed this incredible obsession with him, and I experienced a whole nother level of pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization around this relationship. And that was an incredible blessing because it brought me to my knees in a different way. And I called my sponsor, and I'll never forget, she said to me, she said, do you want to be without him and be happy, joyous, and free sober? Or do you want to be with him in drinking and using? And I said, I know the right answer is that I want to be without him, happy, joyous, and free sober. But the truth is, I want to be with him drinking and using. And she said, that's awesome. Thank you for telling me the truth. Because God can live there, and now we can get to work. And so I was able to do the steps again and have this incredible new spiritual experience, completely different spiritual experience. And in that time, I realized that AA doesn't promise me that I'm going to get all my shit back. You know, AA promises me the relief from a horrific obsession, and for that, it has delivered. It's delivered in spades. So, I don't know what time it is. Am I way early? Because it's good. I think, you know, I just, my greatest wish for all of us is that we just keep growing towards God. You know, and places like this and meetings and like the 12 steps, like it gives us the tools that we need to keep doing that. And so that's my greatest wish for all of us. And it can be true. It can be true. You know, this thing works, whether it's booze, whether it's dope, whether it's him, whether it's her, this works 100%. And I have a life today that I, you know, that I never even dreamed possible for somebody like me. I just started my own business. I'm in love with someone who's like painfully normal. Which is awesome because I'm starting to believe that there's only like room for one of us in this relationship, and it's going to be me. No, but I think we're both a little, I was telling Chris, I think we're both a little amused and bemused with each other at times, just like, wow. But, you know, but I've had the opportunity to show up as a completely different woman in this world. And I owe all of that to, you know, rooms like this, people like you who took my call and who took the time to help me get better. So thank you.